All right, so get ready, because today we're going deep on a case. It's People v. Casasa.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, and this one really gets into love and obsession.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
Okay.
and where the law kind of sits on all that.
Right.
So this case really comes down to the extreme emotional disturbance defense in New York. So, really makes you think, like, can some really intense emotion
Yeah.
actually be a good reason to reduce a murder charge down to manslaughter?
That's a fascinating question.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, how far can you take that,
Oh, right.
So we've got some great source material on this, so let's dive in and see what we can uncover together. And we have our expert in criminal law here to help us make sense of it all. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm really glad you could make it. So, it seems like People v. Casasa is kind of a textbook example of how the law struggles to, like, put human emotions into neat little boxes.
It really is. And this case in particular, just the facts of the case are so dramatic. It really pulls you in. I mean, you have Victor Casasa and Victoria Loconsolo.
Right.
They had a brief relationship, back in the 70s,
Yeah.
but when Loconsolo decided to break things off, Casasa just became fixated, like obsessed.
Yeah, the source material paints a pretty disturbing picture of what went down. I mean, we're talking about Casasa breaking into her apartment multiple times.
Oh, yeah, and that's not even the worst of it. There's a part where he actually lay naked in her bed while she was out.
Whoa.
It's really creepy, honestly. It
Yeah.
really shows how far gone he was.
That's beyond just, not being able to let go.
Right.
That's some, like, serious
Yeah.
I don't know, psychological.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, red flags everywhere.
So it all ends tragically in February 1977,
Unfortunately, yeah.
when Casasa stabs Loconsolo and ends her life. And to make matters worse, the source material mentions he actually put her body in the bathtub.
Yeah.
I mean, it just adds a whole other layer to the
To the creepiness,
yeah.
definitely.
So, like, how does this extreme emotional disturbance defense even come into play in a case like this? With all these
Yeah, well, you have to remember that during the trial, Casasa's defense team, they were trying to use his mental state at the time of the murder
Yeah.
to argue for a lesser charge.
Right.
So they claimed he was acting under this extreme emotional disturbance, all caused by the breakup.
Okay. So basically, they were saying he was so messed up over losing her, he wasn't really in control of his actions.
Yeah, that was the general idea, trying to paint him as a victim of his own emotions.
So did it work? Did the court buy it?
Well, not at first. The trial court convicted Casasa of second-degree murder. They straight up rejected the Eid
Oh,
defense.
wow.
But the thing is, the case didn't end there. It went to appeals, and that's when it gets really interesting because that's where New York's very specific legal test for extreme emotional disturbance comes in.
Right. And I see from the source material that it's kind of a two-part test, two prongs.
Yeah, exactly. So the first prong, it's what we call the subjective element.
Okay.
Basically, the defendant has to prove that they were actually genuinely experiencing this intense emotional disturbance when they committed the crime.
Okay, that makes sense. But I feel like there's got to be more to it.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely more. Because then you have the second prong, which is objective.
Oh, okay.
This one gets tricky because now it's not just about how the defendant felt, it's about whether there's a reasonable explanation for that emotional disturbance.
Right.
From the defendant's perspective.
Oh, so it's not enough to just say, like, oh, I was really upset.
No, not at all. The court needs to be convinced that there was a valid, like, understandable reason behind that emotional state.
So how did Casas's case, measure up against this two-pronged test?
Well, the court acknowledged that, he was probably emotionally disturbed, but they found his reaction to the breakup to be what they called uniquely pathological.
Uniquely pathological, that sounds.
Intense.
Yeah, and kind of I don't know.
Like a fancy way of saying he was way out of line.
Yeah.
And the source material uses this word peculiar to describe how the court saw his excuse.
Peculiar. That's an interesting word choice.
Right.
So, are they saying that even though he was clearly upset, his response was just too extreme, too far outside of how, a novel person might react in a similar situation?
That's exactly what they're saying. The court felt like Casas's obsession, it wasn't really triggered by anything Loconsolo did. It was all fueled by his own, like, internal fantasies and delusions. And that, to them, wasn't a good enough reason to justify stabbing her to death.
So it's like they're acknowledging his emotional state, but they're also drawing a line in the sand. Like, okay, we get that you were hurting, but your actions went way too far.
Exactly. And I think a big part of that was they were worried about setting a precedent. If they let Kasasa off the hook with this defense,
right,
it could open the door for anyone to justify violence just based on their own personal interpretation of events, no matter how skewed or distorted that interpretation might be.
Right. I could see how that could become a problem. But doesn't that also raise some, like, philosophical questions about how we define reasonable when it comes to emotions?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, what might seem extreme to one person could be totally understandable to someone else.
That's the tricky part, right?
Yeah.
It's inherently subjective.
Right.
And yet the law wants to apply this objective standard.
It's almost like they're trying to square a circle.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And the court in Kasasa, they really struggled with this. They ultimately decided that even though emotions are personal,
yeah,
there needs to be some kind of shared understanding of what constitutes a reasonable response.
Hmm.
So they were looking for signs of, you know, understandable human weakness, not actions that stem from, like, complete irrationality or obsession.
So they're saying that there are limits to how much personal feelings matter in the eyes of the law, even in extreme situations like this.
You've hit the nail on the head. That's a key takeaway from this case. And that's why it's so important for anyone working in the legal profession, especially in criminal law, to really understand the nuances of this extreme emotional disturbance defense.
Yeah, I'm getting that sense. It's definitely not a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Not at all. It's a very specific legal concept with very specific requirements. And Kasasa shows us just how high that bar can be.
I mean, it sounds like Kasasa's peculiar explanations just did to cut it.
Not even close. You know, there was expert testimony about his emotional disturbance, but it wasn't enough to satisfy that crucial objective prong of the defense. The court needed more. They needed to see that his actions, while extreme, were at least somewhat understandable given the circumstances.
So even with expert testimony, the court wasn't convinced that his actions were a reasonable response to the situation?
Exactly. And that's a powerful message to legal professionals. It's not enough to just show that your client was emotionally disturbed. You have to convince the court that there's a legitimate, objectively reasonable explanation for that disturbance.
This is definitely giving me a lot to think about. It seems like, you know, even if someone's going through some really intense emotional distress,
yeah,
they might not get much leniency under this defense if their actions are seen as too peculiar.
Right. Peculiar is a good word for it.
Like too far outside of what society deems acceptable.
You got it. And what's really interesting is Kasasa actually takes a much stricter approach than some other areas of the law. For instance, the Model Penal Code.
Yeah.
It uses a purely subjective standard. So they only focus on the defendant's mental and emotional state. There's no separate test for reasonableness.
Interesting. So New York is really drawing a firm line here.
Absolutely.
You know, putting that emphasis on this objective standard.
Right.
Making sure the defense aligns with, like, communal values, not just individual psychology.
That's a great way to put it. And that's why Kasasa is such a valuable case for lawyers to study. It really highlights the tension between individual circumstances and the law's need to uphold a consistent, you know, objective standard.
I'm already seeing how much there is to unpack here, and I feel like we're just scratching the surface.
Oh, we've only just begun. There's so much more to discuss. Like, for instance, the court's language on reasonable explanation. It's fascinating how they interpret the statute and how they apply it to this really complex situation. And then there's the whole question of how this defense might evolve in the future. There's definitely room for further development and clarification.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely ready to keep going. I'm eager to dig even deeper into the reasoning behind the court's decision and see what other lessons we can learn from this case. And for our listeners, stick with us because there's a lot more to come.
You got it. Yeah. So, you know, as we were saying, New York really goes for a strict approach to this extreme emotional disturbance defense, way more than some other places. And it's all about, like you were saying, trying to keep things balanced.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to recognize, like, individual circumstances. But then they also don't want this defense to become a free pass for anyone who just, you know, claims they were upset.
Right. Exactly. They want to make sure the law reflects, you know, like, a shared idea of what's actually reasonable, what society thinks is reasonable.
Right. Which is where things get kind of tricky.
Totally.
Because what's reasonable to one person, you know, might be totally bonkers to someone else.
Exactly. It's so subjective.
Yeah.
And yet the law, like, insists on having this objective standard.
Yeah. And that's ultimately what tricked up Kasasa's defense, right?
Yeah, for sure. The court, they acknowledged his emotional disturbance. Like, they weren't denying that.
Yeah.
But they just thought his explanation for it, you know, all the breaking in, the lying in her bed, it was just too weird, too unique to his own experience.
Too peculiar. Right.
Exactly. They even use that word peculiar, which is interesting.
It is. It's like they're saying it's not just about how intense the emotion was, but also like the root cause of it all. You know, like where is it coming from?
Right. And that's a big takeaway from this case, I think. It's not just about, oh, I was feeling so emotional.
Yeah.
You got to look at what's actually causing that emotional state.
So like if someone's reacting to something that most people would consider really provocative, that's when they're more likely to have a shot with this defense.
Potentially, yeah. Like, imagine someone walks in on their spouse cheating.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to trigger some serious distress for anyone.
Yeah.
And the law recognizes that in those moments of extreme stress, people don't always make the best choices.
Right, right.
But the key thing is the disturbance needs to be caused by something external.
Hmm.
Something that a reasonable person could, you know, understand and relate to.
So in Casas's case, his obsession wasn't about anything Loconsolo did.
Right. It wasn't her fault.
It was all his own stuff, his fantasies, his delusions.
Exactly.
And that's why the court didn't buy it. They were like, nah, that's not a good enough reason.
Right, right.
So that's a really crucial distinction for lawyers to keep in mind, isn't it?
Huge. Where's the disturbance coming from? That matters so much.
Yeah, that makes sense. It seems like New York is basically setting a really high bar for proving this extreme emotional disturbance thing.
They are, and it's on purpose. They only want this defense to be used in very specific cases.
Like where it's a really exceptional situation.
Right, where the defendant's actions, you know, they're still criminal, obviously,
right,
but they're kind of understandable given how much stress the person was under.
So just feeling emotional, that's not enough.
Nope, not even close.
You got to have a good reason for it.
Right.
And that reason better be something that society agrees is reasonable.
Exactly. Which is why Casas is such a great case to study. It shows how the courts are going to interpret this whole concept and how to build a solid defense strategy.
It really illustrates just how difficult it can be to, you know, reconcile an individual's unique experience with the law's objective standards.
For sure. And it makes you think about, like, how much is the law evolving to keep up with what we know about the human mind? How complex it all is.
So what are some of the big takeaways, you think, from all this, from our deep dive into Casasa? What should our listeners be thinking about?
Okay, well, first off, got to understand those two parts of the defense, the subjective and the objective.
Right, the two prongs.
Yeah. So did they experience a disturbance, and is there a reasonable explanation for it?
And we've seen how tricky that reasonable part can be.
Oh, yeah. That can get real messy real fast. It requires lawyers to really think about the context and to show that their client's reaction was in line with, you know, what's considered acceptable.
So even if they're genuinely super distressed,
right,
if their actions are seen as too peculiar.
Huh. Yeah. Peculiar.
Like outside the bounds of what we consider understandable, they could still be out of luck.
Absolutely. And that's why you can't just rely on expert testimony. It's got to be more than that. The court has to believe that this was an understandable human reaction, not just some like totally random, irrational thing.
I'm also thinking about what you said earlier about the burden of proof.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
It's on the defendant to prove both of those things.
Both prongs, yeah. And they have to prove it by a preponderance of the evidence.
So it's not enough to just say, oh, I was emotionally disturbed.
Nope. They have to show it with proof, and it's got to be convincing.
Right. And we should also point out, this defense, even if it works,
yeah,
it doesn't get you off scot-free.
Right. It's a partial defense.
So your charge gets reduced, like, from murder down to manslaughter.
Yeah.
But you're still on the hook.
Still in trouble. It doesn't wipe the slate clean.
Yeah. It's like the law is trying to balance things out, recognizing that, yeah, extreme emotions can be mitigating circumstances,
yeah,
but also holding people accountable for their actions.
Exactly. You can't just do whatever you want and then say, oh, I was feeling emotional. There's got to be a line somewhere. And Casasa is a great example of that.
And this case has had a big impact, hasn't it? It gets cited a lot.
Oh, yeah. All the time. It's like a landmark case. It keeps informing how the courts approach this whole ED thing and how lawyers build their defenses. It shows how the law is always adapting, you know, trying to keep up with what we learn about human behavior, about the mind.
Yeah. It's fascinating. It's like Casasa makes you think about things that go way beyond the courtroom.
Oh, totally. It gets into like basic human nature. Like,
yeah.
How far should our empathy go?
And where do we draw the line between what's understandable distress and, you know, criminal behavior?
Right. Those are the tough questions. No easy answers. But that's why Casas is so interesting. It gets those conversations going, makes us grapple with how complicated we are as humans.
Yeah, it makes you realize that the law isn't just some, you know, fixed set of rules. It's alive. It's changing all the time.
Totally. It's got to evolve to reflect who we are as a society and what we know. And Casasa is a perfect example of that evolution.
Well said. So for our listeners who are interested in learning more, you know, really getting into the weeds, I highly recommend checking out the actual court opinion. It's really insightful.
Oh, yeah. It's a masterclass in legal reasoning, for sure. And it gives you a glimpse into how all these things intersect. Emotion, reason, the law.
Right. And it's a case that, you know, it speaks to everyone, really, not just lawyers.
Totally.
We all experience emotions. We're all trying to figure out how to navigate those emotions.
Interesting.
In a way that, you know, makes sense.
Yeah.
It's a good reminder that the law isn't some abstract thing. It's a reflection of who we are, you know, as a society.
For sure. And like society, the law is always changing. And Casasa shows us that it's a valuable guidepost as we try to make sense of it all.
So, you know, thinking about the future, I do wonder, like, how might this defense kind of evolve, you know, in the coming years? Are there, like, areas where the law could be, I don't know, more refined when it comes to extreme emotional disturbance?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely an area where there's room for more, you know, exploration.
Mm.
And I think one thing that could really use some more work is how they apply that objective prong. Like, how do you decide what's a reasonable emotional response?
Yeah.
We've been talking about it, and it's so tricky.
Right. It's so subjective.
Exactly. But the law is like, nope, gotta be objective.
Right. So are you saying we need, like, better guidelines for the courts to help them figure out where that line is, you know, between the defendant's experience and how the law looks at it?
Exactly. Like, what if there were more specific things they had to consider when they're deciding if the response makes sense? Like, okay, what was the provocation? Did the defendant have, you know, any trauma, mental illness? What about cultural norms? All of that stuff could be really important context.
Yeah, it would definitely add, like, a whole other layer of complexity.
Oh, yeah. For sure. But honestly, I think we need that complexity.
Mm.
If we want the law to actually reflect, you know, real human experience, we got to get into the nuance.
Right. It's like the law is always trying to find that balance.
Yeah.
Between keeping things simple and getting it right.
Totally. And cases like Casasa, they really push us toward that. They show us where we need to improve.
Well said. So for our listeners who want to dive deeper into all this, you know, really get into it, I'd say go back and read that court opinion.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a great read. And you can really see how they're thinking.
Right. And it's not just for legal people, you know?
Oh, absolutely not. This case, it's about all of us.
Hmm.
I mean, we all have emotions. We all try to figure out how to deal with them.
Right. In a way that, you know, fits with our values, our sense of what's right.
Exactly. And Casasa, it reminds us that the law, it's not just some, like, separate thing. It's part of who we are as a society.
And like society, the law keeps changing.
All the time.
Casasa shows us that. It's a really good guidepost as we, you know, try to make sense of it all.
For sure. Well, this has been such a great deep dive. I've really enjoyed talking about this case with you.
Me too. Thanks so much for being here, for sharing your expertise. It's been really insightful.
My pleasure. And to all our listeners out there, stay curious, keep those questions coming, and keep exploring the crazy world of law.
Until next time.